what we've decided to do is to have a panel. So I'm going to invite the speakers to come up to the front and sit at the tables at the front. And I'd like them to give their views about what we think, you know, whether we think taxonomies and metadata should be exposed to the user. So if you'd like to come up to the front, that'd be great. Okay, so here we have the questions. And what I'd like to do is just to ask each of the panel members to give a brief overview of what they think the position should be, you know, what they think the issues are. So metadata and taxonomies, best hidden behind the scenes or fully exposed to users? That's the question. And we'd start off with...
I think the first thing should be the metadata, the content, whether it's taxonomy or ontologies or just description, bibliography, should be separate, delineated from the presentation. So this metadata can sit behind the scenes, but also part of the metadata could be displayed. For example, what we do in at Solent University is we make a decision, like we have a kind of a working group, a discovery working group. What we do is we decide, among with information librarians who are subject librarians, decide what fields to display. But the rest of the metadata, it's actually probably four times the metadata that's displayed, is sitting behind. The table of contents was not displayed at some point, but then later on we decided actually it's better to display the table of contents. So the metadata could be filtered. So metadata enriching on one hand, metadata filtering on the other hand. So the content could be displayed depending on user needs. Of course, my suggestion is to empower the user to be able to decide which fields actually to display. What facets, if they want the facets displayed on that right side, they can decide to say, okay, I need facets. For example, in our case, we have language as a facet, but because most of the books are in English, the facets are not used, but it's still there. So I think the best thing would be to just predominant collections in English, so language is not actually used as a facet. But it should be there, because at some point, we might have a campus in, you know, Singapore, then we, or China, or Africa, then we can include that as a facet.
Right, I think my perspective is probably from sort of user experience point of view, so making sure that we understand who the user is, actually draw some sort of persona, perhaps understand what the user journey is with content, right? So if we talk about the reader searching for a book, one perspective, obviously somebody trying to categorize it would be completely different, and then perhaps context in which certain applications used. If it's a power user, they know exactly what they're doing, they know exactly what they're looking for. It probably makes sense to actually make metadata as much exposed as possible, taxonomies this way. If user is simply trying to look something up and was interested to see the statistics actually that you brought up, perhaps it's better, you would better keep it hidden, you know, making sure it's not interfering with whatever it is they're trying to do, they're trying to get through in the data.
Thank you, Jean. Yeah, and Tom.
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of sounding awfully kind of equivocating, I'd say it depends, but essentially I agree with the idea that you have to do your user research and your user testing. So it would then depend on whether your users are used to using, you know, a secondary navigation or, you know, a sort of faceted navigation, at which point you would display the parts of the taxonomy that are useful to them, but that doesn't necessarily mean everything. But if their primary way into the content was via a search bar, then again, unless there was evidence to suggest that they need a further navigational structure after they've done a search to do refinement, probably people just want to find what they're looking for and therefore they will do a search. And if the taxonomy and the associated thesauri and other things, other metadata are doing their job, then that search bar plus that happening in the background, I think is going to be sufficient, because the results set will kind of narrow down and they will get to the bit that they're looking for. Perhaps sort of going back to my experiences with SharePoint and with our website, certainly if you're going to present the taxonomy in a kind of faceted navigation, then it's certainly a really good idea to go for the dynamically generated version. So every time you have a result set that has been refined from everything that's possible to retrieve, then you only want to have a taxonomic structure that reflects what is in that result set. Certainly the thing that I sort of picking up on the point about SharePoint again, certainly something that's a frustration is the fact that those taxonomy terms are copied across to the filter and they are not dynamically set to the result set that you have. And if you have a site section that is only a portion of your overall content, you are almost guaranteed to be offering people options that will come back with a zero result. So if you are going to present the taxonomy, make sure it's done in a dynamically generated way so as not to give that poor experience of offering something that comes back with a zero result.
Nikki?
To be honest, I'm not really sure. I mean, I had a foot in both camps where we've had the thesaurus behind the scenes, but not necessarily part of the search engine, which I think a thesaurus should be. I think it should be part of that search experience, because otherwise, search, no matter how sophisticated it is, it's search in indexes. You know, it's just term indexing. And if it's on the front end, if it's exposed to people, then I think pick your case. If it's of use to people, then certainly put it there. If they don't get any value out of it, if it doesn't help them discover things, then it's, you know, and it's just as well sitting in the background, then leave it right there. One thing I think that is a good thing, well, it depends on how good your thesaurus is, but it's a good thing about having it in front, is people, you're then using people to beta test it, because they will quite quickly shout if they can't find things, or if they look at your taxonomy and they expect him to see terms and they're not there. And there could be a perfectly valid reason why they're not there, because you don't publish enough content on it, or because it comes back with zero results, you know. But it's having that new end user feedback I always find really interesting, and it can, you know, because a lot of times when you're creating a thesaurus, even with your subject matter experts, until you put it into practice, it's still very much an academic exercise. And until you put it into your systems and see what the content it generates and how good or not good that is, then, you know, that's the real test of whether or not, you know, it's a great taxonomy. Putting it on, exposing it to users means that you can get them to give you good feedback without having to create loads of focus groups, etc. But it could expose, equally, it could expose that it's not necessarily a great taxonomy as well, and that might damage your reputation. So it's a bit, I don't know,
okay,
just so, to sum up.
Yeah, I think the sort of interesting variation. Are there any contributions that other people would like to make? I know several people here. Yes.
So far you've talked about whether you should expose the metadata or taxonomy for discoverability, for search, for navigation. What do you think about for display, so to provide context?
I think that's I think that's really valid, actually, because it's a really good way of actually showing, again, from a publishing point of view, of showing this is the content that we cover, you know, and it's a really visual way, a good visual way of doing it. Sorry, I had to jump in there.
No, that's great.
I actually think that, again, it's something I kind of argued for quite a lot, to have that as a, I'm not going to say navigation tool, but it's almost like it's showing up. It's like, you know, this is what we got. You know,
so it's a way of demonstrating the scope of what people are looking
Absolutely.
At, because that's not necessarily
and,
always
and then
obvious.
That can help them make, you know, it can help them make really important decisions very quickly.
Did you have a particular experience of that?
I think that's what we're using our metadata and taxonomy for at the moment on our website, is that we're sort of automating the building of dynamic pages of content on from a variety of different publishers, a variety of different teams on similar topics, and we're displaying the metadata alongside the title and description, etc., to give people that context, especially when maybe the content isn't so well written. So it lets people know, like, you know, is it relevant? Is it from the right date? Is it from the right kind of subject area? Without writers actually having to put that right in the summary or the title.
Yeah. Can I ask which organisation that was?
The ICAEW.
Oh, right. Oh, yes, yes. Chartered Accountants.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, somebody over here.
Yeah, no, just instant reaction was, doesn't that create quite confusing, complicated displays?
It can do, yeah.
Fair enough. There's somebody over here. Yeah. Sorry, I don't know your name.
Anton.
Yeah. Sorry.
My thought was about putting users in control, really, about the decisions, because it was all hidden. How did they get to the result that's displayed to them with no idea what's under there? Whereas helping the user along by saying, well, this is how we got to where what's shown to you now. Is this what you meant? Giving them a helping hand as well. So it's a sort of guided, perhaps that's the ideal sort of thing, guide them along to help them to find what they want by showing them the connections, perhaps, under the hood. You seem to be nodding.
That's making me think of perhaps a fairly specific use case, but where a user goes in and, for example, they're using a search box, if they type in an ambiguous term, actually starting to display what you have in your taxonomy is going to be necessary, because if they've typed in something ambiguous, you need to understand their intent, and in order to get that, then you need to display to them the sort of different meanings of what they've typed in. You know, within your content, I mean, when I was at Getty Images, orange was the kind of the big one, because it was the colour, the fruit, and then the erstwhile mobile phone company. And so somebody was typing in orange, you didn't really know which of those that they meant, so you wanted to then pull those terms from your taxonomy and say, in our world, orange is this, this, and this. Which do you mean? And of course, Wikipedia have their disambiguation page, so that's then listing all of the things that match that kind of syntax. So from that point of view, I think that is very helpful. To me, it's kind of, again, it's kind of targeted. So it's pulling out the bits that match the syntax that's been written in, and then saying, yeah, this matches this. So which of these would you like to choose to proceed on your journey?
That seems to go along with the Solent University's data there. That typically you put in one or two terms, maybe three. Generally speaking, that might be too vague. It might be something very specific in those two or three words, but generally.
Yeah. I think no matter how much we try to display, we can't display all the metadata. Even you know, not even a half of the metadata, because we have a very limited screen. In the past, for example, in the catalogue era, We were very limited, so that's why we in libraries we invented sort of Anglo-American cataloging rules, where we say don't write illustration, you say ILL, don't write, and other authors just say et al, and all these Latin abbreviations, page numbers are abbreviated, everything is abbreviated, because we had a very limited catalog. We can only display as much. Even now storage is not a problem, but user attention is a problem. And we need to go with the flow, in a way, with the users. But we have as much metadata as possible, just fueling this search. And at Solent, what we do is, we also have the first page we present to the users is search. Because we thought we did study, and that's what they want. Probably if we went back, go back 20 years, I think we probably presented to them browse. Now browse is the second option. It's there, but browse by author, browse by title, browse by all these various, you know, metadata facets. So it's there. So, but the second one is, because someone actually asked me, I put one of the slides online on Twitter, and someone said, what about users who are not just library users? someone who wants to use the metadata, you know, for open data, for example, because it's a government data, it has been paid by the public, etc. So there is this call for open data. So how, if you don't display, how is someone going to say, oh, there is some useful data? So you have a way of presenting that, but you present it without obstructing the user. So the users just won't find something present. I think if you see some of these commercial applications like Amazon, they have a lot of categories, you know, the facets. But also they focus on search. Google also does similar. They focus on search, whereas they have actually the metadata behind the scenes. So in short, I think we need to balance. But as I tried to present it, I mean we had a short time, so to present the data, how user search is actually very interesting. So no matter as a cataloger, as you know, a librarian, I want students to use the advanced search, but they don't use it. So what are you going to, how are you going to balance that? Because we want them to use the advanced search because it provides them, you know, filtered results. Instead of searching for research methods, it will provide them like thousands of results, especially for big universities, you know, millions of results, combine the books, the e-books, electronic journals. So I think we need to study the users as well.
I think that what we've heard, what Thomas showed us earlier in his search engine, which isn't quite yet integrated, but what users want to do is they want to type a word or they want to type two words and they want to get a series of results out of it. And that's where we start, unless they're professional information finders. So we have to start there. And this little interface that gives you a search box and then returns a list of searches, which also contains a structured list of the metadata that is used in the search results that you've got, with the ability then to untick boxes in order to narrow in, gives people the opportunity to recognize that they're broadly speaking in the right area, because the metadata headings, if they're human readable and sensible, which is another thing that we need to think about, will help them. And also, if they've typed orange, and they were actually interested in fruit, and they've got a bunch of stuff about computers, then that will prompt them to re-enter their search because the neighbourhood that they're in will seem unfamiliar. And that seems to work in practice. We've got a couple of things that work like that, and people seem very pleased by it. And they seem very unpleased by giving them, for example, a list of headings from your taxonomy, of the main sections from your taxonomy, that they can select by drilling in, which is essentially like a hierarchical navigation scheme. And if your taxonomy is worth anything, then it's a long list. Sorry, that was a speech. That wasn't, wasn't a question.
Any comments on that before? Okay. Phil had a question. Yeah.
Just wanted to kind of understand what we think is the next generation of reasoning, of the classification, because the way I look at it is that, okay, we build these classifications, but the next generation is the AI making these decisions on orange, really, at the end of the day. And just your thoughts on that.
Right. Maybe Eugene, you could start.
Okay.
Well, I suppose it's, to take a step back, so running sort of machine learning or AI algorithms, you need data, and you need to make sure that data is of high quality. So your taxonomy or the tags for a given piece of content would become these data points or the trying to remember the word, right? So they would be sort of features, right, in your training sets. And in theory, yes, absolutely, you can take perhaps your taxonomy classification, add in some additional parameters, and then figure out that, yes, the user is actually looking for orange because it's time of the day and this classification and something else, and because it's raining, you know, versus orange as a telephone company. I'm not sure what my answer is, I suppose. It's important to have high-quality taxonomies because they're just, it's their data, as just as everything else, and so we need to make sure it's high-quality.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'd absolutely agree with that. If we're talking about AI and how that can kind of intelligently make its way through the murk of sort of ambiguous terms, for me, in a way, it has to kind of forget the label that we're giving it. So using our orange example, when we see orange written three times, unless there's something else to give context, then we're not going to know what the difference is. And I think the intelligence is to kind of say, well, I don't care that this is called orange. For me, this is ID 654321, and this is ID 785454. And they mean, as far as I'm concerned, they mean completely different things. And so I will sift on that basis. But then when I present to the user, it will just say orange, or maybe a orange with some other syntax to kind of give it a bit more context. But I think essentially the way to do it would be to forget that it's ambiguous, understand that that they mean completely different things.
That's it. I think at the moment AI and machine learning are might be a bit slightly controversial, but buzzwords that are thrown out there, they're kind of the sexy topics at the moment, and they mean different things to different people. A few years ago it was big data. I don't think big data actually went anywhere, but it's just nobody talks about it anymore because they talk about machine learning. And I think a lot of people think that AI and machine learning are silver bullets, and they're not. They still need a lot of human interaction and intervention. They need the humans to write the rules so that they can do the learning in the first place. And then they need the humans at the end to go, yeah, you got it right, but you didn't get things right. And so that's where the machine learns. And I think it's a really essential and important part of any kind of information management. But it's not a magic bullet, you know.
There has to be human guardrails, doesn't there?
Yes. Yeah. Problem is, it's misinterpreted as being something that you can just automate, and it's like, yeah, no, you can't. You know, it will do a lot of automation for you, and it can do it. The more intelligent the people who are writing the rules in the first place, then the more intelligent it's going to be. But yeah,
we've had two more questions. I think Claire and then Richard.
Yeah, what I was going to say, it's related to your comment, is actually that you can present metadata to users in a way that isn't a sort of horrible clunky hierarchy, things like tag clouds, for example, and that's actually quite usable for most people. And it does kind of encourage serendipity as well, because you can look at the related concepts, and you can see whether you're, you know, they're in the same kind of semantic area that you're looking at. And it's a way that people are quite familiar with, because they're familiar with using things like Amazon, and, you know, people who read this also like that. So I think that's a way, but it doesn't immediately make them think, oh, this is some sort of weird classification scheme that someone's dreamed up. It's quite a familiar thing. And also, just on the topic of artificial intelligence, I think one thing that we really need to look at here, that I don't know if there's been any work done on that, is the growth of voice search. Because that is now the primary, especially for younger people, that's the primary form of searching. It's not typing in a keyword. So, how do we apply our metadata and taxonomies to voice search?
I think that's a really excellent point, and again, something we'll be pondering for some time. Maybe we need a meeting about that. It'd be a really interesting one.
I think with the dimension kind of changes, because when you're dealing with, for example, ambiguous terms again, you're looking at homographs, and now, of course, you'll be looking at homophones, and that's kind of
that. And very terms of people.
This whole other new thing to think about. Yeah.
Okay, Richard.
Yeah, I'd just like to comment that it says best hidden behind the scenes or fully exposed to users. It's fully exposed to users and all machines. I think that's, you know, we hear a lot about it. I was at a conference a few years ago where the keynote speaker was from Google. He was talking about voice search, and their goal is basically that everyone goes through their digital assistant, which knows them perfectly and will fulfil their every need. So the idea is, you just say, I want to go on holiday to this place, and then the assistant will go away, knows you like staying in, you know, budget hotels with free Wi-Fi, but near a beach, and it knows everything about you. And, I mean, my son got given, he bought something, he got given a Google, I don't know,
Alexa
thing. Yeah, and I mean that's what that's the end goal, is to tie you to your assistant, which is then that good that you will go through it. And then when the flight is booked, Google will go to KLM and book your flight. It will go to return book hotel, and it will take a cut each place. So I think in the context, you know, exposed to users, for me, I'm very concerned that information is being made available to the information giants, for want of a better word.
I think that's a very interesting and kind of political note to
finish on. It's an issue of trust.
Yes.
Are there any final comments before we finish? Because I think we're sort of coming up to our wrap-up time. Okay, well, I'd like you to join me just in thanking the speakers today for